Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Can I say one thing? You know, I was pretty heartless about poor old Andre and his death. Heartless. I mean, I love that guy. I love that character. And then in his death chapter, my biggest comment, was just a complaint about the prose. I didn't really like the chapter. And I even think I joked at that time, like, maybe I'm just in denial. That's not why I'm not feeling anything. You know what? I was watching the BBC War and Peace miniseries. And there was a shot where Pierre rocks up at the Rostovs, I think it was. And Andre's there and he's really glad to see him. And there's a big hug and they're like, oh, so glad to see you, my friend. And they kind of like hug and stuff. And I was like, ah. Oh, that's a good bromance, and Andre's dead. And then it hit me. That's when it hit me. It was like days later, watching the BBC show. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that. I thought that was kind of odd. Today, we are up to book 13, chapter 12. 4 weeks had passed since Pierre had been taken prisoner. And though the French had offered to move him from the men's to the officers' shed, he had stayed in the shed where he was first put. In burnt and devastated Moscow, Pierre experienced almost the extreme limits of privation a man can endure. But thanks to his physical strength and health, of which he had till then been unconscious, and thanks especially to the fact that the privations came so gradually that it was impossible to say when they began, he endured his position not only lightly but joyfully. And just at this time he obtained the tranquillity and ease of mind he had formerly striven in vain to reach. He had long sought in different ways that tranquillity of mind, that inner harmony, which had so impressed him on the soldiers at the Battle of Borodino. He had sought it in philanthropy, in Freemasonry, in the dissipations of town life, in wine, in heroic feats of self-sacrifice, and in romantic love for Natasha. He had sought it by reasoning, and all these quests and experiments had failed him. And now, without thinking about it, he had found that peace and inner harmony only through the horror of death, through privation, and through what he recognized in Karatiev. Those dreadful moments he had lived through at the executions had, as it were, forever washed away from his imagination and memory the agitating thoughts and feelings that had formerly seemed so important. It did not now occur to him to think of Russia, or the war, or politics, or Napoleon. It was plain to him that all these things were no business of his, and that he was not called on to judge concerning them, and thereafter could not do so. Russia and summer weather are not bound together, he thought, repeating words of Karatayev's which he found strangely consoling. His intention of killing Napoleon, and his calculations of the cabalistic number of the beast of the apocalypse now seemed to him meaningless and even ridiculous. His anger with his wife and anxiety that his name should not be smirched now seemed not merely trivial but even amusing. What concern was it of his that somewhere or other that woman was leading the life she preferred? What did it matter to anybody, and especially to him, whether or not they found out that their prisoner's name was Count Bezukhov? He now often remembered his conversation with Prince Andrew and quite agreed with him, though he understood Prince Andrew's thoughts somewhat differently. Prince Andrew had thought and said that happiness could only be negative, but had said it with a shade of bitterness and irony, as though he was really saying that all desire for positive happiness is implanted in us merely to torment us and never to be satisfied. But Pierre believed it without any mental reservation. The absence of suffering, the satisfaction of one's needs, the consequent freedom in the choice of one's occupation, that is, of one's way of life, now seemed to Pierre to be indubitably man's highest happiness. Here and now, for the first time, he fully appreciated the enjoyment of eating when he wanted to eat, drinking when he wanted to drink, sleeping when he wanted to sleep, of warmth when he was cold, of talking to a fellow man when he wished to talk, and to hear a human voice. the satisfaction of one's needs, good food, cleanliness, and freedom. Now that he was deprived of all this, seemed to Pierre to constitute perfect happiness, and the choice of occupation, that is, of his way of life, now that that choice was so restricted, seemed to him such an easy matter that he forgot that a superfluity of the comforts of life destroys all joy in satisfying one's needs, while great freedom in the choice of occupation, such freedom as his wealth, his education, and his social position had given him in his own life, is just what makes the choice of occupation insolubly difficult, and destroys the desire and possibility of having an occupation. All Pierre's daydreams now turned on the time when he would be free. Yet, subsequently, and for the rest of his life, he thought and spoke with enthusiasm of that month of a captivity, of those irrecoverable, strong, joyful sensations, and chiefly of the complete peace of mind and inner freedom which he only experienced during those weeks. When, on the first day, he got up early, went out of the shed at dawn, and saw the cupolas and crosses of the new convent of the Virgin, still dark at first, the hoar frost on the dusty grass, the sparrow hills, and the wooded banks above the winding river vanishing in the purple distance, when he felt the contact of the fresh air and heard the noise of the crows flying from Moscow across the field, and when afterwards light gleamed from the east and the sun's rim appeared solemnly from behind a cloud, and the cupolas and crosses, the hoar frost, the distance, and the river all began to sparkle in the glad light, Pierre felt a new joy and strength in which such in life, such as he had never before known. And this not only stayed with him during the whole of his imprisonment, but even grew in strength as the hardships of his position increased. That feeling of alertness and of readiness for anything was still further strengthened in him by the high opinion his fellow prisoners formed of him soon after his arrival at the shed. With his knowledge of languages, the respect shown him by the French, his simplicity, his readiness to give anything asked of him, he received the allowance of 3 rubles a week made to officers, with his strength which he showed to the soldiers by pressing nails into the walls of the hut, his gentleness to his companions, and his capacity for sitting still and thinking without doing anything which seemed to them incomprehensible, he appeared to them a rather mysterious and superior being. The very qualities that had been a hindrance, if not actually harmful to him in the world he had lived in, his strength, his disdain for the comforts of life, his absent-mindedness and simplicity, here among these people gave him almost the status of a hero, and Pierre felt that their opinion placed responsibilities upon him. All right, there we go, another chapter down, and Pierre has kind of found happiness, weirdly enough, as a prisoner of war. I think he's been yearning towards feeling accepted by common people, hasn't he, for a long time. That's what seems to be driving him. He's got all this respect among the top of the top just because of his family name, just because of his fortune. And I think he yearns for, like, once he's got that respect, in some ways that's a very difficult thing to obtain, but once you have that, the respect of the common man then becomes the impossible thing to obtain. And I think that's what he's yearned for, just to be a normal person, I suppose, would be one way of saying it. Chattel Valster said, due to the hardship which Pierre has endured, he's received the peace and contentment with himself which he has long searched for. It is said, however, that after his return from captivity for the rest of his life, he speaks with rapture of that full peace of mind which he had only experienced at that time. Do you think he will completely lose his feeling of peace and contentment, or that it will only be reduced? I think he's changed. I think he's changed for good. Of course, like, when you have a big life-changing revelation, it's most potent at the start. And the degree to which it's going to wear off, I suppose, is the question we're asking here. But I think he's changed for good in this case, right? Because he's kind of satisfied that need that he's had for so long. And now that it's satisfied, he will be changed. He'll no longer have that that kind of question mark lingering for him. It's like this question for him of like, if you take everything away from me, strip me down to my most bare essence, take away my status, my money, my power, everything, and just take me down to my bare character, who I am, and put me with the common people, how will I fare? Will I be liked, or will I be deemed useless or pathetic? And that's the question. He's like, do I have any inherent worth to the people? And this chapter proved to him that he did. And actually the qualities that he was insecure about in his privileged life, you know, being so big, being kind of thoughtful and distant, were actually qualities that the common people really liked about him and even worshipped as, like, hero worshipped about him. So he's just found out that he does have inherent value, that he is he's not just a waste of space, he's a worthwhile person. So he's happy. I think that's a really cool thing. Pierre now often recalls his conversation with Prince Andre, says Jettelvelster, who was of the opinion in that conversation that happiness can only be negative. Which conversation is he exactly talking about, and does he interpret Andre's thoughts correctly? Yeah, I think he's talking about one of the earlier conversations when Andre was really depressed, right? Not sure. But the question I had in this chapter is, does he, or I guess he doesn't know that Prince Andre is dead, does he? He also doesn't know that his wife is dead. He's got some surprises coming when he gets out of this prison. Alright, now I think that's going to do us for today. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.